They're nightmares. Us. Fighting together to defend something we love.
You must know you cannot win.
Is there a more heroic thing than fighting for what you love? For freedom? It certainly makes for a good story. Let's see if it's true here. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Forever Fangirls podcast. I'm Sheila Amato, and along with my wife Kimberly, we're your hosts, and we're glad you can join us.
Yes, and as you heard from the trailer, we're going to be reviewing part two of Rebel Moon, The Scargiver.
This dropped on Netflix on April 19th, and as of this recording, it is listed as Netflix's number one movie this week. Now, our standard spoiler alert is in effect here, as we will be talking about specific plot points and themes, so if you haven't seen Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver yet, you will be spoiled.
And some minor movie facts, not a lot this time. The budget was $83 million, and as of opening weekend, really, like, kinda ratings with a critics at 17% and 50% as of audience reviews, and it currently holds a 5.2 stars on IMDb, all of which are lower than part one.
Yeah. But we'll be discussing it, so.
Yeah, we'll get into that. So just the simple synopsis from IMDb. Korra and surviving warriors prepare to defend Velt, their new home, alongside its people against the realm. The warriors face their past, revealing their motivations before the realm's forces arrive to crush the growing rebellion.
So we got a lot more of the backstory for each of the warriors, including the fact that Korra was the one who killed Princess Issa. What? No. Anyway, she did this at Belisarius' order, then framed Korra for murdering the royal family. Well, that's not nice.
You know what I have to say to that?
What? You had to find a way to put that in, huh?
Yes, I did.
Anyway, so the rest of the sequences include showing how General Titus embraced his old leadership post and led the villagers to strategically defend their farming village in Velt. Korra does finally behead Atticus Noble, so he, for sure, is now dead and not coming back.
Are we sure, though?
She beheaded him.
I know, but could he come back?
I'm sure. But for right now, anyway, he's really dead.
Gotcha.
And in war, there are casualties on both sides. And unfortunately, not only did Nemesis die, which I was crying about that, Gunner does too. This is especially hard for Korra, as she and Gunner have become lovers. So, as Korra comes clean about who she really is during the funeral pyre scene, it is revealed that Princess Issa is somehow still alive. And Korra must now pursue this new mission to find Princess Issa. Titus, Tarek, Milius, the rebel forces, and Jimmy the robot all join in her quest.
So let's just dive right into the good. The visual effects are stunning.
Oh my God, are they? I mean, they're really, really cool.
Yeah, I mean, the planets, the costumes, the way everything is laid out. I mean, really and truly, visually, and we said this about Dune as well, visually,
it's stunning.
This is a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. It is a masterclass on how to create a space opera. And when you watch the behind the scenes, they did a lot of this practically.
For me, practically, I think it would be easier for the actors to like really get into the character and just believe that they're on Velt.
I also just think it's really cool that how far technology has come, that instead of having, say, a tennis ball on the head of a stick, this is your dragon's head, you can now actually do a 3D printout of a head in like this green plastic that they can then, so you have something a little more to act across from. So a lot of, if you do have a chance and you are interested in these films, I would suggest watching the behind the scenes that they've released. It's also, there's a lot of fast-paced action, really, you know, good explosions and shooting. And, you know, I like the fact the weaponry is very unique and that the bullets aren't just bullets or like laser beams. They're actually like a lava. Mm-hmm. So like they splatter off things. It's a unique twist on things.
I mean, I really did appreciate, because I thought that there would be, you know, a lull in the action, but the story moved really quickly.
Yes. This part felt faster than part one.
Mm-hmm. Because all of the foundations have already been built.
Yeah. So. And I think the foundation for a universe has been laid down. Mm-hmm. Whether that universe comes to fruition, We don't know. I'll just leave that there.
Yeah. As we're watching the story, it now, as I read in the summary, it now makes sense why it's so hard for Cora to open up, right? When she was a child, her world was destroyed. She was adopted only to be groomed to assassin the royal Princess Issa, anyway, and be the scapegoat for it. Yeah, it's like, how many times can you like bring her down or put her down?
Well, I mean, everything she's ever cared about, she's also lost. Like she even says when she has the lover in the military, which again, they say don't fall in love, but you can have a lover. That was a little, I don't get it.
You need something to fight for.
Yeah, but how can, it was just one of those things where I was like, okay, mm-hmm. and just let it go. But mm-hmm. She loses that individual in battle as well.
Yes.
So having lost that and then being transferred and finding the innocence and the love and everything else that Princess Issa just gives her, to then have to do that. And then the little girl's looking at her going, I forgive you. That's hard to swallow.
And that's why she was a fugitive.
And that's why she couldn't open up. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of psychology to it, which mm-hmm. is intriguing.
Yeah. So there are a lot of different themes here. So shall we dive into that?
Yes, please.
Okay. Why don't you go first?
Redemption is, I mean, it was a huge arc in part one. It's a continuing arc in part two. Mm-hmm. Learning the backstory of the warriors, why they stayed and fought for the village in a way to redeem themselves.
Yeah, you had mentioned that as we were watching the film. And the one character that I really was gravitating to is Nemesis. Mm-hmm. And all of the little interactions that she had with Elgin, the village kid, who is gravitating to her as well. It's like she finally is letting the vulnerability back into her heart, like allowing herself to be happy and actually like have fun with a little boy. That part of her that lay dormant for so long is finally coming alive a little bit.
Yeah.
That's the type of thing that I wish I could see a little bit more. I mean, they had no verbal dialogue, really. It was all nonverbal cues.
I mean, her smirk when he came over and he takes this piece of grain and he kind of puts it underneath her nose.
Trying to tickle her.
And she grabs it and then smirks. There's a development there that in some way she didn't need dialogue. I think
exactly.
If she verbalized anything, it would take away from it.
But that's my point, right? Especially since in part one, she is this massive assassin, mm-hmm. right? But she's always in the background. And maybe that's because that is part of her character, right? She's an assassin. She's living in the shadows. But I still wanted to know more about her backstory.
She was the most intriguing character out of everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize that she had to cut her forearms.
Yeah, she cut her forearms off and the gauntlets, she said, knew her blood and came to life. Did you notice the bad guy's blades are blue and the good guy's blades, Nemesis's blades, are red? Just saying. I like that reversal.
Yes. I only noticed that because you mentioned it several times.
I mentioned it as often as possible.
But yeah, it's one of those things where if they had mentioned it a little bit more on part one, because mm-hmm. I did not realize that the gauntlets were actually like this mechanical foreign thing. I thought that that was just part of her armor.
Mm. See, right? But in part one, she gets stabbed through it.
Yes.
By the spider.
And I thought that that was like Luke Skywalker.
She
had a mechanical arm.
Gotcha.
Didn't realize that she willingly cut off her forearm for that.
I think we're just going to have to put a... Because I see where you're going and I don't want to go too far into it since we're talking themes.
Okay.
I mean, Titus, all of his men were killed in front of him when he said no to the realm. Mm-hmm. Tarek, his planet was destroyed and he's a prince and his mother said you better flee because if you know you're the bloodline you are everything, but he wanted to stay and fight mm-hmm. and he didn't mm-hmm. We spoke about Nemesis. Melissa said her world was taken from her and she didn't have anything to stop it, and then when Darian Bloodaxe was mm-hmm. killed, she couldn't protect him, so she's choosing to protect the village. and protecting what's right and standing up. Mm-hmm. And Cora is the odd person out because when they're asking, she still can't kind of accept what she's done or verbalize what she's done because in some way she feels ashamed of it and she feels that no one will accept her for who she is because of it. And then when Gunnar says, is it Gunnar or Gunnar? Because I don't remember how they pronounce it on the show.
I think it's Gunnar.
Well, whichever. When G-Man turns around and says, you know, when he falls in love with her and accepts it, all of a sudden at the end, she is willing to come clean and be honest because she has to accept this is something I did.
Mm-hmm. An extension of the redemption, just piggybacking on what you said, Cora is trying to accept what she did, right? The past is part of you. Mm-hmm. And in order to move forward, you need to forgive yourself, especially in the scene where Gunnar was lying there and he's dying. And he said, I know what you are and I love you. He accepted her for everything, her good parts, her bad parts, everything. And it didn't matter to him.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is basically a classic David and Goliath story, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they're simple farmers. They were taught how to fight. And against all odds, they win. I mean, the realm keeps coming and coming and coming, but somehow they're able to still stand with a little help from their friends.
Oh my God, you had to bring that in?
Yes.
So yeah, you're right. It's classic, you know, David versus Goliath, you know, it works. It's fitting. Mm-hmm. I don't really have much to add on it. I'm kind of babbling.
It's all good.
But on the flip side of all of that, being too arrogant, it's always a problem when you look at films like this.
Noble
literally says, go to the longhouse, get the children, get the women. They'll have to negotiate. They have nothing more to fight against because we'll slaughter them if they don't. And they turn around and number one, Nemesis is in there, which in and of itself is going to be difficult for however many people you send. But then on top of it, the women and children are armed.
Yeah.
Everybody was ready to fight. Just because they are women and children doesn't mean they won't give you a good fight. You should never underestimate anybody, because when you have something to fight for, you will fight to the end until there is no foreseeable way out.
Right. Which is why in the army, Cora was told that she had to find a lover so that she could fight for that person. And I think it's in part one. She mentioned it in part one. But the question to you is, do you think, because basically Noble wanted to take command of his ship and didn't want to go through the regimen of getting better, right? And perhaps he wasn't 100%, so his faculties could have been functioning at 80 or 90%. That's why he didn't see or didn't see the strategy of what the villagers were doing.
But he was mentioning certain strategic aspects that they were bringing up. Mm. Look, it fits the character that he forced his way out of the medical area, but it also fits the pressure he's under. Mm. Because he was basically just told, either you go through the ice to the big fishies down there, or I will hang your head on a spike with the Senate, or you bring back and do what you're supposed to do. So he's stuck between a rock and a hard place. Mm. So you have all of this being offered to you of either a beautiful seat, your name on high, or death. There is no in between.
Yeah.
Either you do or do not.
There is no try.
Exactly. So if you are someone who is pushed to the limit, you are arrogant in your abilities, you've been brought back from the dead, so you can't even die. Mm-hmm. And you wear the scar on her chest to remind her, you, the scar giver, ergo the title, you gave me this scar and I'm still here. There's an arrogance and a confidence that comes with that. And I think that is what they played up to. I think they use that knowing what he's like, knowing what he could do. You use it against him. So that's what I was taking it as, that Cora and the general and everybody else was talking about who Noble was. They thought he was dead. When they found out he was alive, they're like, okay, well, we faced him before. He got ahead of them before. So if he's gotten ahead of them before and he can't be killed by Cora, why wouldn't he think he could take them easily? Nothing has proven he can't.
Until he gets beheaded.
Until he gets beheaded and his ship gets brought down.
Or so we think.
We'll just leave that there.
All right. Well, I wanted to just close on the final theme of found family.
Again.
I mean, they did a whole presentation of flags because the warriors are now part of the villagers. They said that it was a way to thank them, but everyone in the village has a flag.
And they hung it on the front, the archway, so that when the invasion began, you saw those flags hanging there.
Yeah.
And then it was sad to see them over their sarcophagus or their bodies when they were burning in the pyres.
Yeah. I was still crying with Nemesis' flag. Okay. I'm okay. I'm all right. It's all good.
You're
yes.
Good? Okay.
All right. So are we good to now go and talk about the bad?
All right. Can I start?
Yes. I know you're raring to go.
I very much enjoyed Zack Snyder's vision. But can we please not have 20 to 40 slow-mo shots to the point of where it literally removes the emphasis on the slow motion shot. If there are so many of them, they literally at a certain point no longer have that wow factor.
Yes.
It just became, oh, they're slowing it down. Like, do we really need to see grain in a slow motion being chopped?
No. I agree with you there. And in one respect, it's the Snyder signature, right?
Because it is. Yeah.
At one point, General Titus during the fight actually kicked a soldier. And I said, without even thinking, this is Sparta. Mm-hmm. And then you started laughing and we just giggled because you were thinking the same thing.
Yeah. There were spots where it worked beautifully in the fight scene, especially during Nemesis with the swords and the movement around. But at a certain point, you've got so many of them that I lose track of which ones are good because I literally see the scene start to slow down and I go, oh, okay, it's a slow motion shot. Instead of, oh, here's an emphasis shot.
Yeah. For me, one of the bad, I was harping on this a little bit already, but I have to say it again. I don't think that they utilized Nemesis as much as they should have. Her scenes to me are few and far between. I think that even if part of the character is to be in the shadows and in the sidelines and, not in the forefront because her whole thing is element of surprise, right? I think there's just so much lacking there. I feel like there's a rich story behind her character that is left unexplored. It's just left on the table. And maybe there might be more scenes in the extended version, but I don't know. It just upsets me that I did not see more of her and that she died in battle protecting the children. And I'm still upset about that. I don't think that she should have. But
well, no, she came full circle.
I know she came full circle.
I will accept the ending of her character arc. I don't like it, but I'm going to accept it. Mm. The problem I have is similar to yours. There is such richness to her, and we are given more, a little bit more of every other character, but for her, I feel it was very thin.
And that's my point, right? There weren't a lot of scenes with her.
I agree with you. Nemesis is a very rich character, and I would like to see them expand into the universe and do a Nemesis movie. It could be, Rebel Moon, the Nemesis saga. But to your point, I also think the director's cuts being announced at the exact same time as the regular editions is a huge downfall and a marketing fail.
Yeah.
Yes, we understand. There's the Zack Snyder cut, and then there's what Netflix wanted because they wanted PG-13, and really and truly, the script based on the behind-the-scenes stuff was red. Mm-hmm. It was R. Mm-hmm. But here's the problem. Knowing that Zack Snyder's behind it and his director's cut of Justice League was leaps and bounds better than the original, even if Rebel Moon is by him, from him, A to Z, do you watch the first one, or with your experience of seeing Justice League, do you wait for the director's cut?
I more likely would wait for the director's cut because I want to see the story as it's meant to be.
So why announce them at the same time?
I don't know.
I understand their point. They wanted something that could be a PG-13 that everybody could watch. But you know what? Deadpool is not PG-13. And it succeeds. Why does it succeed? Because it stays true to what it is. If this was an R, it should have stayed an R and been released as an R, as he intended. Mm-hmm. Maybe we wouldn't wait for a director's cut. Maybe the reviews would be different. There's a lot of things up in the air of maybes, because what we're being presented with is not his vision completely. It's his vision to a point.
Yeah.
But not in its entirety. So I'm probably going to watch the director's cut to see what his full intention is. And at that point, you've kind of got the audience going, oh man, Rebel Moon was crap. Do you see the reviews? They're not going to want to watch it if they haven't watched part one. They're going to see the reviews and go, why would I want to watch a director's cut?
So you're going to see the director's cut, which is going to be longer, with probably more of those slow motion scenes.
I'll just, you know what I should do? I should do a tally and count them. But again, even the slow motion sequences, I can ignore them and bypass them because I found a connection to what he was trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, that article that we linked to in the previous episode for part one actually did say that part three was greenlit already before part one and two was released.
But see, and what I read when I looked that up is that part three wasn't greenlit yet. He was hoping for it because they know where they want to go with the story. They know the next part. They know the side stories. They've created this universe. And once again, Netflix is kind of like, eh.
Well, I have to go back then to that article because I remember reading it and it says that part three was already green lit.
I don't know. I think the biggest bad for me is the announcement of, hey, here's part one. By the way, there'll be a director's cut of part one. I think he should have released part one and part two. If they needed to do it as PG-13 and Netflix was dead set on it, mm-hmm. and that was the agreement, it should have been announced part one and part two would be released. And then after everything was done, then they could have said, surprise, you're going to be getting the Snyder editions and they will come out in like July and August. Mm. And they could have made it like a bonus, like they do the behind the scenes stuff after it's done.
Right.
That would have been, I think, better, because you're telling me, don't watch this one because a better one is coming. It's like showing me a old school video recording when I've got a Blu-ray DVD here of the same thing and it's been remastered. Which one are you going to watch?
The remastered one, of course.
Exactly.
Yeah. Any other bad then?
No, I think I went off on a tangent there.
It's all good. So, any cute?
I liked it when Titus turned around and he was being called Titus, and I think it was the prince. And he says,
Herrick. Yeah.
Yeah, he's Herrick. He's like, that's general to you.
Yeah. I was like, oh, all right, he's back.
Yeah. But it was also done with a smirk.
Yeah. My only cute was that Elgin was playing with Nemesis. Again, a Nemesis scene, because I'm just obsessed with that character.
For me, that scene specifically was about, even within the darkest moments and the most horrific situations, there is always innocence that we have to think about. There is always the ability to love, to extend ourselves beyond what we think we can do or what we think we're worthy of. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we can allow ourselves to love.
Because love is a powerful, powerful thing.
Love will keep us together.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so I think that is the end of our discussion of Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver, right?
Yes.
Okay. So now it is time for our Forever Fangirls rating. Drum roll, please. We rate Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver, 3.5 stars. And we agree on this rating.
So once again, we are faced with the flop or not section. And once again, I'm a bit unknown. You know, without the viewership information, as far as how many people are viewing, how many hours are viewed, what they, being Netflix, utilize as their stats to renew, to greenlight, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All we can do is kind of go off the listing, and it's listed as Netflix top 10. There are reviews. They're not very good. Ours are somewhat of an exception, which is interesting because normally we seem to be on par with a lot of people, except in the case of, say, Dune and this mm-hmm. one. And that's our personal opinion. So our personal opinion is influenced by our history and everything else. Everybody has an opinion. So that's really not enough to know what the streaming company is going to do. And unfortunately, we do have experience here where we've seen season one of Warrior Nun marketed pushed. Good critical reviews. Part one of Rebel Moon, pushed, marketed. Okay reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Some not so great. Well, a lot not so great. Season two of Warrior Nun. Didn't even know anything. You get a trailer every now and again.
Yeah, they didn't market it at all.
No marketing whatsoever. But the critical reviews were 100%. Reviews from those who watched, I believe it was 100%, maybe it's down to 98.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a ridiculous number of people saying it was a phenomenal season. Canceled. Rebel Moon, Scargiver, part two. I didn't see anything promoting it, that it was coming out or whatnot. I know I added it to my Netflix watch list. So when I came on, it said, oh yeah, by the way, it's out.
Mm-hmm.
I also noticed my Forever Fangirls thing reminded me what day it was out, because I have a master sheet where I put the film we're covering and what day it's releasing. So I knew, because of my research, when it was coming out. I didn't see anything, and maybe I missed it, but I didn't see anything until the review started coming out.
Yeah.
I don't know what the heck they're doing. I don't know what the heck they're thinking. I have no idea what's going on. I feel like for every step we take forward with streaming platforms, with information, we take 100 backwards. And frankly, I can adore something and I could be one of maybe 2 million to 10 million, even 50 million people that watch it over and over and over again. And it might not be lucrative enough to renew or greenlight another part or another movie or whatnot, because we have billions of people in the world.
Yeah, it's I'm sure that it's a very complex calculation, right? Because this is a lot of money when you put a film together.
That's $83 million.
Yeah. So, like you said earlier, we don't know what the criteria is. And so it's hard to try to figure out what might be the successful formula, either from our point of view as the audience, because it's frustrating to know that I love the show, I think it's good, other people think it's good, but Netflix doesn't. So what is it about it that they don't like?
And we also don't know, one thing that's been rattling in my head, we don't know if Netflix, even though they go by viewable hours,
mm-hmm.
which I have heard and seen every now and again, they'll release, oh, this had like 200 million viewable hours. Do they internally look for IP addresses or MAC addresses? Because a system will have a MAC address. So if you're watching on your computer, that's one device. But if they're going by IP addresses, and that means household, if, say, 1,000 households are watching it over and over and over and over again, maybe that's the metric that they look at. Because viewable hours is one thing, but if only, say, 1,000 people are watching it over and over and over again to keep it in the top 10.
It's still 1,000.
It's only 1,000 people. Yeah. Are those people, does how much they pay every month warrant having an $83 million film, so to, you know, for an example?
Yeah. I don't remember if it was in the show notes for the last episode, but I had read an article that a spokesperson from Netflix, maybe it was even the president, that said, we have never canceled a successful show. So if we take that verbatim, that means that your point about the households, the 1,000 households watching it over and over again, does not translate as a successful show.
But then I guess the question to follow that up, what is successful?
Yes.
Is it making its budget back, and like a movie where you make back the budget and the marketing or whatever the percentage is above? Or is it that specific show or movie or whatnot increases subscribers? Again, this is where we are, even if we have a little sliver of information, we are still so far behind the veil of...
Yeah, it goes back to the fact that we do not have the criteria. Without the criteria, there's no way that you can build something or understand how it works.
It's very frustrating.
Yeah, and only the ones who have the criteria know how it works.
We need to become very, very popular so that we can get information on the criteria.
Oh my goodness.
And even then, I don't think they'll release it.
Mm-mm. No. Anyway.
So just my final thoughts. Part two is a continuation of part one, but with more depth to the characters. I do wish some of that depth had come sooner, maybe spread out across part one to part two. Maybe if we could have watched it back to back, the flow would have worked a little better if there hadn't been such a gap between releases. But overall, it reminds me of the Lord of the Rings movie series. There's long, sprawling, epic films that have beautiful scenery, some eyebrow-raising moments of disbelief that don't quite fit into the framework that you've set up. But at its core, the films are a real story of heart, love, redemption. And does it remind you of all of those great movies of the past? Of course, but what movie doesn't? Harry Potter is Star Wars with a wand, but the execution is different, and that allows our minds to enjoy both. I think if we look at this series as a unique story on its own and not compare it to the other space operas we've seen before, we might see it in a different light. If not, we're dooming ourselves to never enjoy another film of this genre going forward, as it's just going to be a lesser version of something we've loved before.
Lumos! So you can see everything!
Oh my god.
That was funny.
For my track, yes.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm not going to say anything more because I think that you've covered most of it and it was very eloquently said.
Oh, thank you.
The only thing I will say is that I still wish there was more of Nemesis.
I'm
sticking to that.
No, I agree. I think that character needed more screen time. But that is going to be our show for today, folks. Thank you for tuning in to our review of Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver. If you'd like to reach out to us here at the Forever Fangirls podcast, we have several ways you can do that. You can go to our website, foreverfangirls.com, and find links to our Discord, social media, contact form, and easy access to subscriptions and past episodes. And don't forget to leave us a review. It helps us out tremendously.
And until next time, stay safe, be kind, and remember, at the end of part two, Korra has found a new purpose, to find the Princess Issa and to fight. And this time around, her real found family will be standing beside her.